Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
All right, well, how was your holiday? I know some of you had Friday off. Some of you had the Thursday off and then worked Friday. Some of you didn't have any days. I don't think Jack had any days off. Jack worked his butt off.
I had half a Thursday. What was the fourth? Thursday?
For Thursday.
Yeah, I had half a Thursday off.
So, good morning, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. Jack Lancaster is here.
It was a barbecue.
Bi-monthly appearance.
You know, I channeled my inner Andy.
Really? Did you smoke something?
Yes, I did.
Nice.
I got a sirloin roast.
Okay.
And threw it in my Traeger for about 6 hours.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Turned out really good. Everybody loved it.
I smoked 12 pounds of pork shoulder.
Oh, but that was good.
It turned out really amazing. Good. Yeah, in fact, we had enough for all of our guests to take some home, and then we had it again. I put it in the crock pot. We had it again yesterday for dinner.
Ooh.
And it was as good yesterday as it was off the Yoder originally. So, yeah, I love smoked meat.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk in a little while about areas that we become expert at.
Okay.
And how to become an expert. And of course, you know, being an expert in something is fascinating because you tend to become an expert at something that you really like.
Yes.
If you don't like it, you don't want to do it, right?
Right.
I mean, and there are people that, you know, maybe for a living or whatever became an expert in certain fields. But, you know, if I was told I had to become an expert in toenail clipping, I would be like, no thanks, you know.
Yeah.
But I do have my areas. You have your areas.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that.
Okay.
In a little while. Let's talk about the 4th of July a little bit.
All right.
In America.
Independence Day.
First of all, thanks to everyone that came. You probably didn't even know about it. We had a patriotic fireside on Thursday night. Now it was held in an LDS church, a stake center downtown, but it was not a religious ceremony. It was about the songs that helped shape our great country and some of the great presidents, Jefferson.
I love our American patriotic songs.
Yeah.
Those
great
awesome.
Songs. Great songs.
You never hear Battle Hymn of the Republic anymore, you know?
Yeah, true.
That's what I really like.
We at this fireside thing, they played a video clip of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing at Ronald Reagan's inauguration.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. In the parade.
And they were on the float, and they stopped in front of Reagan, and he was white. It brought him to tears.
Yeah.
And then afterward, he said, I can't think of a more fitting American moment than the Battle Hymn of the Republic and the Tabernacle Choir. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember that very well. I was watching that on TV.
But I do want to, it's funny, someone after the program, and I forget her name now, I apologize for this, said she was in the Tabernacle Choir that sang that day for Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
And she said, if you'd have looked really careful in that video, you would have seen me. But of course, it was a white job. But still, that's pretty cool. Great fireside. Great job by John Green, who put it together. Dr. John Green, retired professor, who put it all together. And I was fortunate enough to be able to narrate it and just be a part of it. It was awesome.
Sounds like a good time, buddy.
It was awesome, yeah. So, like you, I'm so happy to be able to, that our country still is able to get together and celebrate our Americanness and how wonderful it is to be America. Before the 4th, I read a story about how something like 36% of Americans and rising aren't proud to be Americans. And it made me sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's disappointing.
That is sad. Maybe, lots of reasons, I'm sure.
I guess.
Social media, TikTok.
Liberal Democratic,
all the usual suspects.
So,
we could name those.
Yeah, we could.
Because it used to be that even the it didn't matter what party you belonged to, you were a loyal American. You know, back in the '60s when we were kids, '70s, it was not even a question if you weren't. You know,
it was like 94%.
I mean, the question was, am I going to be drafted to Vietnam? That was a legitimate question, you know, and those are legitimate things. But, you know, it's funny how it's morphed into this complete anti-American sentiment, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, a lot of reporting going right now, making landfall in Texas is Hurricane Beryl or Beryl, depending on who you ask. Or the correct pronunciation is Beryl or Beryl. Or anyway, I looked it up and it still doesn't make sense to me. But it comes from beryllium.
Uh-huh.
And that's the name of that hurricane making landfall now down in Texas. You were telling me.
Is it a hurricane or a tropical storm?
When it made landfall, it was a Category 1 hurricane.
It was a Category 1. Okay.
You were telling me, though, that you got to listen to the reports from American media and from Mexican media about the storm. Tell us what you learned.
Well, on the Mexican media, it's funny because, first of all, back when Beryl was, beating the crap out of Jamaica, and it was about to cross that little piece of the Caribbean and hit the Yucatan, then the American news said when it crosses the Yucatan, it's going to hit the increasingly warm waters of the Gulf and turn into this, could be this huge Category 4 or 5 or 3 or 4 or 5 hurricane.
Yep.
But at the same moment, my wife watches Mexican TV and the Mexican news, and it was only saying it was going to be a tropical storm until right before it hit land, and it was going to go up to a 1. And then immediately after it hit land, it'd go back to a tropical storm.
Right.
So it wasn't going to be nearly as bad. And, you know, I just see that climate change, you know, man-made agenda everywhere. And I'm sorry, but, yeah, American media is just so – they bought into this thing, hook, line, and sinker so much.
I heard an audio clip from Joe Biden over the weekend, and he basically, the gist of it, and I don't know, they have the exact quote, but the gist of it was you would have to be blind or stupid not to see climate change.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, so yeah, are Republicans blind or stupid? And I'm like, what he didn't say was the Republicans acknowledge there is climate change.
Mm-hmm. Climate's been changing since the planet.
Climate changes all the time.
The planet was born.
What we don't acknowledge is that it's caused by us.
Or the amount of it that is caused by us. And that's the question.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if the United States fell off the face of the earth today, we only represent 14% of the carbon dioxide that's going into the atmosphere. The vast majority of carbon dioxide is emitted by China and India.
Yep.
You know, the vast majority. And
there are two-thirds of the
world's population.
Whatever
you do here, however many electric cars you buy, however much you tune up your thermostat so that you don't burn as much energy, so the power plant doesn't burn as much coal or, you know, natural gas, it's not going to make a lick of difference. Nothing.
Well,
nothing.
Okay.
And because, you know, there are natural sources of carbon dioxide emission out there on the planet. You know, there's decay of the plants when the tree falls over and it starts decaying and emits CO2 because it absorbed it when it was alive.
Right.
Anyway, and the fact that the more trees are growing, there's more crops that are ever been harvested in the history of the planet. The crops are more bountiful. One of the reasons is there's more CO2 in the atmosphere, and CO2 is plant food. So I go back to the, you know, if you want to talk about expertise in something, this is something I study on a regular basis. I don't know if I'm an expert in it, but I would say that I care about it, and I think about it because I want my kids to have a positive idea for the future.
All right, we're going to get to experts right after the weather break at the bottom of the hour. Right now, I want to talk about the 60s. All right, first thing that pops into your head when you think of the 60s, you think hippies.
Miniskirts.
Free love and miniskirts, right?
The Monkees.
Maybe Creedence Clearwater Revival.
No, the Monkees.
The Monkees, the Beatles, right? But do you think about divorce rate and murder?
No.
Most people don't.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the 60s. Did you know that the divorce rate in this country from 1960 to 1969 nearly doubled? And the murder rate in this country from 1960 to 1969 nearly doubled?
I believe it. But the 50s was a very idyllic type.
It was.
Of world.
Came out of World War II. We were proud to be Americans. We all worked hard. We raised our kids to work hard.
Yeah.
We were prosperous.
Yeah. And we were, and everybody had a certain attitude about right and wrong. Everybody, the vast majority of the people were going to church. They were, had some sort of religious upbringing, an education.
Yeah.
Things like that. I think that when all that fell apart, and I blame the Great Society for a lot of it.
IntellectualTakeout.org. That's a website. There's this, an article called "Murder, Divorce, and Rock and Roll: The True History of the 1960s." And he said, with all those statistics, the bad ones, divorce and murder going up, so there had to be something happened in the early 60s to cause all that. And he said that in all his investigation, and maybe the number one thing that he was able to find that would have a major effect on this was, the ruling by the Supreme Court that prayer should no longer be allowed in school.
Yeah, well, that...
And also the rise of no-fault divorces, those two things.
Yeah, that, well, again, when you tear up the family, then all these other bad side effects are going to take place. And wherever you have a culture that respects the family, you generally have law and order because they teach the kids how to behave, generally speaking, you know. And,
So let's talk about prayer in schools. I went to elementary school in the 70s, early 70s. You went in the late 60s.
Yeah.
It was still pretty new and sensitive right there that you couldn't pray in schools. In
well,
fact,
kindergarten and first grade. I spent half my time here and in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And the second grade on, I was here in St. George. And
Wait, you were in kindergarten in Las Vegas. What year would that have been?
Because
I went to kindergarten in Las Vegas in first
67?
Grade. 67? Okay, yeah, I was 71, I think.
So. Yeah. But
Hal Hewittson Elementary School.
Yeah, I Bonanza Elementary in Vegas, and then up here at West Elementary. It's not there anymore. It's courthouse is there now, parking lot.
Yeah.
Mr. Lindsay was our principal. Mrs. Kreider was my second grade teacher, but we never had prayer here. I never went to a school classroom in St. George, Utah that had prayer in it.
So I went, bulk of my schooling took place in Texas.
But I'll tell you this, I got in trouble a few times. And this, I remember this was in Las Vegas. I got sent to the principal's office, me and another kid, and he threatened to spank us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they called my mom, and guess where the spanking came from? Dad.
Yeah.
Because I was misbehaving at school.
Yeah.
And so I was more afraid of the teachers because I knew that my parents would take the teacher's side. I didn't have a prayer.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened, it wasn't my, it was going to be my fault. Yeah.
The bulk of my schooling took place in Texas, and there, I remember the principal had a paddle hanging on the wall.
Board of Education?
And he had drilled holes in it. And let me tell you, you were scared of that paddle.
Yeah, that was principal in Las Vegas. He had the paddle on the wall. It's called the Board of Education.
One of the things that happened to me, this has nothing to do with the topic, except that it was an experience for me. So you go to school, and this would have been middle school. I'm in Texas, middle school, the 6th, 7th grade, whatever it was. And when you go to school and you get there early, everybody's just kind of milling around. We call it the commons area. Kind of, you were on school grounds, but you weren't in the school. You were hanging out and stuff. And so this kid came up to me, and he spit on me.
Oh.
He was an acquaintance. I wouldn't call him a friend. Spit on me. So I wound up being a reactionary young fella.
Were you a big guy for your age?
No, not really. Not at that point.
Okay.
But I wound up and slugged him in the stomach.
Oh, yeah.
And just as I slugged him in the stomach, the vice principal walked by.
Uh-oh.
And he grabbed the kid by the collar, and he grabbed me by the collar and hauled us to the principal's office.
Yeah.
And he sat us down, and then he took the kid in first.
Uh-huh.
And then the vice principal disappeared, and the principal, the kid was in with the principal, the big guy.
Yeah.
And he was in there. I mean, I sat there, and I'm supposed to be in class at this point. School started in probably 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Felt like forever an 11-year-old, 12-year-old, whatever I was. And in the meantime, while I'm waiting, the vice principal came back in to the principal's office, and he went back in the room and didn't leave. And so I was like, I don't know what's going on. It's kind of weird. And then I hear the paddle. I can hear it through the door. I can hear whap, whap, whap. That kid's butt got whooped, right?
And you thought, oh, crap, I'm next.
I'm next. Yeah. I was really worried. So that kid came out of the room. I'll never forget. He came out of the room crying. He was just crying and went off, I guess, to class or wherever he went.
Yeah.
And they called me in next. And I was so scared.
Uh-huh.
I was, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get it. And the principal had to sit down, young fella, and I sat down, and the vice principal's on the side, over on the side, and the principal went around his big old giant oak desk and sat down, and he said, Andy? I said, yes, sir. Because you always said sir in Texas. You had to say sir. I said, yes, sir. He said, I understand, I can't remember the kid's name, I understand, Joey or whatever his name is. I understand he spit on you, and that's why you slugged him. Is that true? I said, yes, sir. He said, all right, go to class.
All right, there you are.
That was that's how big spitting was in Texas. You do not spit on someone in Texas. That's worse violence. So I didn't get spanked, but I really
well, you were provoked.
I was going to. Well, spitting is...
That's pretty big provoke.
Yeah.
Probably do that today.
Yeah. So back to prayer in schools. And you know, we 60s is an idyllic time, right? Especially if you didn't really live in the 60s. Now, you lived in the 60s, but you weren't really old enough to participate in the 60s culture, if you will. You weren't a teenager.
No, but I had, you know, older friends and that did. Mm-hmm. It was really funny because if you smoked, I mean, cigarette smoking, practically every adult in my world smoked cigarettes, so that wasn't a big deal. But pot was coming out, and that was like a big thing. And you would go. I remember my very first concert I went to was in Las Vegas or Chicago, with the group Chicago, people were just lighting up and passing the joints down the hallways. You know, this was probably like 72 or something.
So you're only at this point 10 years old or something.
Yeah, I was pretty young. I think I was I forget the reason, but it was a big black and white divide between the people that were like on the, they just made the decision they're going to be anti-establishment. And then so the hippie culture was kind of born back then, and I think also, you know, the birth control pill came out, and that created a whole new, you know, set of challenges
forever,
and opportunities, if you want to call it that. You know, I think Woodstock was in the 60s.
69, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and you think about when, you know, that shaped the boomer generation, basically, that whole era. But there was, I was always on the side of the goody two shoes kind of guy. I was not there. I didn't turn into a rebel until I was in my 20s, but yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So the 60s seemingly innocent. Of course, the Vietnam War started in the late 60s.
Kennedy got us in Johnson.
Kennedy was assassinated. But there's a dark side to the 60s.
And that's another thing is you think about it, because it was so weird. Kennedy was assassinated in 63, and I would have been a year old.
I
remember it. I remember my parents watching TV and being shocked at the news. But think about it. We had a president that was assassinated and murdered, and he was he was very popular up until that time.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular. Of course, he was immortalized after that. And then his brother, like the next year, the 2 years after that, was killed.
Yeah.
And then Martin Luther King was murdered. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got, what in the world's going on? And it was a really weird time when all these people were just getting like, oh, and the guy that shot Kennedy, that was accused of shooting Kennedy, was shot by
Jack Ruby.
Yeah. So it's like, what in the world, you know? And that really helped, I think, upend people's, like, you know, you had this blind faith in our government because we were doing some amazing, and we were going to go to the moon.
Yeah.
We went to the moon in 69. We were building all these giant projects. We were we came out of World War II unscathed. We, you know, our country was, our industrial complex was going crazy. We're and we were fighting the Cold War. We're the good guys against the bad guys, the God-fearing Americans and the Allies against the godless Russians, you know, and those commies.
Right.
And we had a mission. We had a purpose. You know, the missile crisis, Cuban Missile Crisis,
right.
You know, on the edge of World War III. So, you know, it was really a tumultuous time that things were changing very fast. And I just think a lot of those assassinations probably changed people a lot, too.
So we have the no more prayers in school, no more Ten Commandments in school, and the divorce rates. Now, in the 60s, there was something that kind of came as a rise, something called the no-fault divorce.
Right. It was easy to get a divorce.
And basically, it made it so that in the past, before the 60s, if you wanted to divorce, there had to be cause. You know, he cheated on me.
Yeah.
Or she stole money out of my bank account. Or whatever. You had to have, and judges respected that, and they you had to have a pretty compelling reason to get a divorce. And then no-fault divorces came along, and it was like, okay, we want to get divorced. Why? Well, we just don't want to be married anymore. Mm-hmm. Not a very good reason, especially when if there are children involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had no more religion in school, and then no more families, kind of. And the divorce rate started going up and up and up and up. And now it's at like 52% or something of marriages end up in divorce.
See, we've kind of stabilized at that
50%. But that's a big number.
It is. It's huge. It is very huge.
And
you know, there's not a lot of good things. There's good and bad from everything, but there's not. Socially, I don't think there's a lot of good things that came out of the 60s. You know, you even had the race riots. And I remember in Las Vegas they had race riots. I know in California they had them, the civil rights race riots, where the Jim Crow laws were being overturned in the South and things like that. And there was a lot of racial tension going on, you know, kind of like today.
Yeah.
Or at least in 2020, COVID years.
I guess my whole point of this segment is we look at the 60s as being this free love, amazing time, and there was some good music certainly that came out of the 60s, but there were some very troubling things that happened to this country that started because of what happened in the 60s with the elimination of prayer and the rise of divorce rates.
Well, also the government played its part by LBJ's Great Society. The welfare state got really going really well. You could replace the father in the home with a paycheck from the government or food stamps.
You could. Not really, but you could.
But that was the idea.
Financially, you could.
Yeah.
All right. So this is the Andy Griffin Show. We're going to take a break, check in on the weather, and play a couple of commercials. And we come back. We'll talk about becoming an expert. How hard is it to become an expert in something? You'd be surprised at how, I'm going to say easy, but it's attainable. It is for you. Yes, you. Doesn't matter if you're 50 or 60 or 70 or 80. You could become an expert in something with a little bit of work. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Birthday boys in the house! Rip Taylor is here, 55 years old today. What's up, Rip?
My brother, thank you for the kind.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Happy birthday. Yeah. Do anything fun today?
Working.
Until when you get old, you have to.
I think the family, we're going to go to dinner tonight.
Okay.
I think we might head out to Texas. No. I think we might go out to Longhorn.
Longhorn, yeah.
I think we might go to Longhorn.
What kind of Texas? Yeah.
Get a steak. Nice, juicy steak.
Big fat one, yeah.
I think that's good for the birthday.
Nice.
Yeah.
Clog those arteries.
And maybe for lunch, I might go to Angelica's. Because they have some of the very best street tacos. That sweet pork melts in your mouth. You know, that's freaking awesome. So maybe we might do both of those today.
Nice. The only problem I see, Bart, is if you eat Angelica's for lunch, you're going to be too full for dinner because their food is killing.
Maybe I'll go like at 11 o'clock.
There you go.
And then I'll have plenty of time.
Yeah, good idea.
Settle.
Good idea.
Good plan, man. Good plan.
Welcome back to the show, Bart Rip Taylor.
That boy has good taste in food, I'll tell you that.
He does. Yeah. He does. Yeah. Angelica's for lunch and Longhorn for dinner.
Yeah. Good day. Nice.
So did you see on St. George word of mouth this whole thing about Donutsville this week?
You know, I caught after it was already blown up and back down, but I read that the lady that was running it saw a car accident or something out, and she went out to help out.
So here's what happened. So, and I'm just going to give you the facts, and then the rest is up to interpretation.
Uh-huh.
There was a rear-ender accident right in front of Donutsville on Telegraph. So they pulled over, and the car that was rear-ended blocked kind of half of the Donutsville entrance.
Oh, okay.
And then the car that did the rear-ending was right by the entrance. So there was very, very little room to get into the place.
Yeah.
So that those are facts. That's what happened.
Yeah.
The rest becomes interpretive thing. So supposedly the guy that got rear-ended got out of his car. He had a couple little girls with him, got out of his car, and there were words exchanged with him and the owner of Donutsville. But everyone I've talked to that knows this lady who owns Donutsville is, says she's a super sweet, sweet lady.
Yeah.
But the post said that she was yelling at them and not very nice and stuff. Well, that lady...
Was that the driver of the car that wrote the post?
It was the driver of the car's wife. Although later on... the wife says that they share a Facebook account and it was actually him. And anyway, there are a lot of kind of like, wait, what really happened here? But
yeah.
The bottom line was, I believe that Donutsville had one of its better days ever yesterday. Yeah. The backlash of people going, I don't believe the story is true, and I'm going to go buy their donuts because I think she's a sweet lady.
Yeah.
Which apparently she is a very sweet lady.
You know what that proves?
What's that?
Advertising works.
Advertising works, and maybe there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, well, that could be too. St. George word of mouth cracks me up. The comments there, I don't know.
The thing that was frustrating about this was that whoever posted it, was it the wife or the guy that was actually in the accident?
Yeah.
Basically said, everybody boycott this place because they weren't nice to me. And that
because you were parked in their drive-through.
In front of their driveway.
Yeah, and when you could have just moved a few more feet and got out of everybody's way.
If he'd have moved 10 feet forward.
And he didn't do that.
He didn't do it. Yeah. Anyway, so I don't, honestly, I have no interpretation of what actually was exchanged, words were exchanged or whatever. I've heard that he was belligerent and she was not. I've heard that she was and he, I don't know. I don't know what happened, but I know this, that to get online and to condemn someone's business and actually tell people don't go here because they're jerks, that's not cool. That's not cool. No matter where, if you do it on social media like that, that's just...
Well, people do that when they rate businesses and restaurants with their stars, one star. You know, I've read some really unfair reviews in my day.
Yeah,
you know. So
I know.
I can tell you that's.
And do they matter? Well, guess what? Every time I think about going to a new place, what do?
You look at the reviews.
I look at the reviews.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
Even if I go, on Amazon and want to buy a new pair of pants, I'll go read the review. If I'm going to watch a movie, I go read the reviews first.
And I think if you look at if there's a lot of reviews, then you can kind of general idea of how they generally do.
Yeah,
and that's what I. But if it's like one or two, then it's really you can't trust whatever that is.
Exactly.
But if there's like thousands, then yeah, you could probably trust that generally speaking, this is going to be a decent place.
And I hope people do that. I hope people big picture things on these types of reviews, because there's always going to be a negative. You're a business owner. Uh-huh. Somebody's going to have a bad experience.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it. Maybe they had a bad day
and
things didn't turn. And maybe they had onions in their burrito and didn't want onions or just something, you know, and forgot to ask for it off or maybe your cook forgot to take. Doesn't matter. Somebody's going to have a bad experience
and
occasionally.
You know, all this, I can a little bit empathize, you know. Okay, in the heat of the moment, I can understand there being an argument. The guy's in the car, he's the victim because he got rear-ended. He's got kids, he's got his
crying,
wife.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, what the hell, right? And then somebody's telling him to move. He's interpreting it the way he does. That's one thing. But then to take a minute the next day and then write this review, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
But I understand in the heat of the moment being upset and cranky. I get it. I've been rear-ended.
Sure.
It's not fun.
And it's it was middle of the day. It was 110 degrees, and the kids are crying. And but to sit back and actually then like put a post up and say boycott this business because I didn't
stupid.
Like. It's terrible. So, all right, let's talk about being an expert for a second, Jack. What are if you were to pick two things that you were okay? He's pretty much an expert in this area. What would they be?
Ooh, I guess I would have to say my specific world of business management could be one.
Okay.
I would say marketing, because I was in the marketing business for 30 years.
And you were quite good at it.
And I was a professional. So that amateur-wise, Bigfoot research.
Okay. No, that's
and
good.
Climate change.
Okay, let me ask
you. Those are amateurish.
And I'll throw a couple of mine out there.
You're an expert in broadcasting.
I was a classic rock DJ for a long time.
Okay.
I'm pretty good at classic rock stuff. I can tell you names of band members. I can tell you years songs came out, things like that. Just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But so I'm kind of an expert in that. Okay. I used to be an expert in football. Rules and trivia. Unfortunately, I've gone away from that quite a bit because I don't do that for a living completely now.
Right, right.
But, you know, so the question then becomes, why are you an expert in that particular area? What makes you an expert? What did you do to become an expert?
In which area? Like my professional life?
You
study it, you do it, you work it, you debate it.
Yeah.
If you have an idea, for example, let's take, for example, on my climate change thing. I'm not afraid to debate people on it from my point of view because I'm not in it to win. I'm in it to learn. So if I have a fallacy or a belief or a fact that I've got wrong, then I want to know that because I want to think about why things are way they are. My wife and I debate over my belief in the Sasquatch, and I say, honey, there's lots of evidence out there, but you know, she doesn't. She says it's all fake.
She's not buying it.
No, okay. She's not buying it. So, but that's more.
Do they have a Mexican equivalent of a?
Might. They might. I don't know, to be honest with you, but there should be. I mean, in the mountains down there should be something in the jungles. Okay. You know, because there's wild men in China. There's wild men in North America. There should be one down there. You know, and I think I've heard some reports of one or two down there.
When you were talking about debate, though, you like to debate these things.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you were debating these things, but you didn't really know much about it.
Then that would either, if you're an honest debater, then it would force you to get educated and schooled.
Uh-huh.
And you would have to
get educated.
You have to get educated or else there's no point. And then it's not really debate. It's more of a Q&A, if you will. And if you, like I said, if you're an honest broker of your opinion, then again, you're not in it to try to convince someone else. You're in it to try to learn something from them if there's something to learn. And hopefully that you can exchange some information with the person you're talking to. I've had climate change debates that I've been proud of, and I've had climate change debates that I've sucked at. And admittedly that the other person was, and these were off-the-cuff conversations, if you will. I wouldn't necessarily call them formal debates, but, you know, I let it get personal, which I shouldn't have never done.
You know? It happened.
Yeah.
So there's a story on the website, freemansperspective.com, called 30 Minutes to Excellence. And I love this little article because the guy contends that if you spend 30 minutes every day, so it's kind of a minute's number, 30 minutes a day to excellence, 30 minutes every day learning about one specific subject, you will become a legitimate expert in 6 months.
Yeah, I believe that.
And he said, there were some keys, though. For instance, you got to go for quality, not quantity. Don't just go through the motion. Have you ever read a book and you're sitting there reading a book and you're kind of distracted and thinking about other stuff and all of a sudden you've read like 8 pages and you're like, I have no idea what happened in those last 8 pages.
Yeah.
We've all done that, right?
Yeah.
You must understand why things work, not just how they work. Always take notes. Keep a pen and paper next to your book. And once you finish a book, review your notes to kind of refresh why it is you wrote these certain things down. A really good start to becoming an expert is spending time learning about those things.
Yeah, you're right. And it's hard. It's difficult because in the beginning, it's easy because everything is new. Let's say you stumble on a subject that you're just fascinated with.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens once in a while. You get fascinated. Like about 10 years ago, I discovered Jordan Peterson. And I spent like an hour a day listening to his lectures and his all this stuff, everything that he's ever talked about,
mm-hmm.
because I'm also interested in psychology. Because when you're in sales, you're interested in psychology because you need to understand the person you're talking to to understand life from their point of view. I've gotten good at being empathetic that way. But after a while, it gets more and more difficult to find something new. So I go back in and I reprocess the stuff that I originally, so that I get a better grip. Because I learn by listening and listening to podcasts and videos. I don't do really good at reading or at reading and writing an essay, you know, which is like you do at school.
Right.
And so like right now, for example, Dave Hyatt in the over on Star, he introduced me to this podcast called The Ancient Tradition. And it's a study of ancient religions throughout the world and their commonalities throughout the world. And so to me, that's just fascinating. And another religion is also another subject I'm fascinated in, the study of human religions. And I think that, but it gets more and more difficult the more you learn, because to find those things that are different, or, you get a surface knowledge, then you get a subsurface knowledge. Now you're trying to dig down, and you're creating a foundation. But that pyramid, you know, becomes less and less harder to find the thing that's new and that's more interesting. That sure. whatever. Sure. And
like I already read this, but when you find something new, right. and deeper, and
you right. know. For example, climate change, you can talk about CO2, you can talk about a lot of things, but then there's also sunspots. There's also cosmic rays that play into the process. There's also orbital oscillations and precession of the Earth's axis. Mm-hmm. The fact that Mars has got, okay, we landed a probe on Mars in 1976 on our bicentennial. We landed the Viking probes on Mars. Since then, Mars has gotten warmer.
Hmm.
Yeah, interesting. So then you wonder, okay, well, if Mars is getting warmer, then maybe it's not us as much as it is the sun.
Maybe Mars got warmer because we landed on
yeah,
it.
That's well, what there's they would that. Say. You know, that's what they would we say. We put a few SUVs down there, and of course that did the whole thing. So, you know, there's those kinds of things that you can learn and that you have to build upon, but you have to be interested over the long term. A lot of folks these days, I think this is the sad part, is young people that get into this TikTok brain. There's no depth.
1 minute, man. Yeah. Give me 70 seconds, and I'm
and it's right. it's tempting. I don't watch TikTok, but on YouTube videos they have those shorts, and those are addicting.
Yeah. It was once upon a time in my life I became I would say an expert on the New Testament.
Oh, okay.
I studied
yeah.
it every single day. Uh-huh. I spent time reading it. Yeah. It was just really.
Did you go on a mission?
Important. I did, yeah.
Did you go on a mission where you had to know that New Testament frontward and back?
This wasn't during that time, no. But oh, okay. but yeah, I felt like I was a New Testament expert. Mm-hmm. Now I've started watching the TV series The Chosen, which, by the way, I highly recommend. Fantastically okay. done.
Yeah.
But it has been 20-something years since I was an expert on the New Testament.
Right.
And it's actually prompted me to start. I'm kind of remembering all the stuff I forgot.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah.
Because I stopped studying.
Yeah, you need to get
like,
back
oh,
into
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. So anyway, 30 minutes a day. If you want to become an expert in something, spend 30 minutes a day in earnest study, and in 6 months, you will be an expert. Now, not 30 minutes a day of, I might look at this a little bit. No, you have to really devote yourself, dedicate yourself to actually
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah.
And if you do, you will. Let me quote Calvin Coolidge before we go to commercial break. Calvin Coolidge said, "Press on. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing in the world is more common than than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts.
Uh-huh.
Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent."
There you go.
I love it.
Coolidge, great guy.
We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. Got 4 minutes left in the show. Talking with Jack Lancaster today. Jack is here. Jack, do you remember, this always fascinated me. You can talk about homes, but you don't really buy a home, you finance a home, or whatever. That's true. But it's been that way a long time. Like a long time, like 100 years or yeah. 70 years, whatever. But cars. When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, you bought a car. You got your $2,000 or your $1,500, whatever it was, and you went out and you bought a car. And when you bought the car, you got the title, you got the keys, you owned the car. It was yours.
Yeah.
People don't buy cars anymore, Jack. They finance cars.
Okay. Yeah. Cars are way expensive compared to what they were before. But they uh-huh. do a lot more things.
True.
You got that camera when you back up. How True. Cool is that?
It's awesome.
That's
I
the coolest
it
thing on the planet.
The time,
yeah.
I like the little note that says something like, make sure and check behind your car before you back up because this camera doesn't necessarily reveal everything.
Everything,
I'm
yeah.
like,
yeah.
Well, first of all, yes, I walk behind my vehicle every time.
So, my first car was a gift from my dad. So, I'll give him that. That was awesome.
Way to go, Dad.
It was a Pontiac Ventura 3-speed. Three
really?
On the tree.
I don't even know what a Ventura is, but
well, it was the Pontiac version of the Nova.
Okay,
and it was a 76, and it had a straight line six in it.
Okay,
but it looked cool. It was a nice looking car. It had a great body style to it. It's two door.
My first car.
Yeah,
72 Toyota Corona Mark, not Corolla, Corona.
Corona.
Toyota Corona Mark II.
Uh-huh.
I paid $50 for it.
Uh-huh.
And It didn't run. So I went out and bought a battery, $25.
Uh-huh.
Which batteries are like 200 and something now.
Yeah.
$25, put it in there, started right up.
Ah.
So I got a car for basically for $75.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. It was a four-door Corona. It was an ugly little thing,
yeah.
But it had dents in the back, and it's okay. It was.
Didn't matter.
Yeah.
It was mine.
It was American steel. I was
But I remember the first time I bought a car, I financed it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you? Really? Yeah. Very first time? Mm-hmm. You never bought a car outright yourself?
Well, I have recently.
Oh, okay. No, that doesn't count. I mean, when you were young. Yeah. I bought my second car, I paid $500
okay, for. But yeah, you look at it. When we're young, we don't have money. So you got to, if you're going to get something that's going to last, you got to get some financing on it.
That's true.
And now that, you know, we're older, we have more resources at our disposal than I wouldn't buy my wife's brand new car when we bought it. It's a 2019 Ford Edge. We're financing that. But the car I drive, I've got a 2001 BMW, and I just paid for it because it was only $5,000. So
really? Yeah, and that's how it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, if you even a used car nowadays, you're gonna if you can get a used car for, I mean, the cheapest pieces of crap are $3,000, right?
Yeah.
That's
crap.
Yeah, and that's a garbage.
Yeah.
If you're going to get something that you're actually going to be able to use there on a daily basis, you're paying 10 to 15.
Oh, easy. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know anybody that has that much cash to just go buy one.
Yeah, it's not. But that, you know, it's funny is even the car loans on a newer car, they're actually, I think, like at the credit unions, they're cheaper than you can get a 30-year mortgage for.
And that's kind of what this article online was about, ericpetersautos.com.
Yeah.
I've got the Brian Hyde referred me to this, but he's basically, they're trapping you. Because you can get a no-interest or very low-interest loan on a new car and put it out over 6-7 years.
Yeah.
You're actually going to pay less for a new car than you are for a used one. But guess what? You are obligated. You have just signed up for a 7-year sentence.
Yeah. Well,
how get you.
Again, you can do that or you can sell it, and hopefully that you're not upside down in the value when you go to sell it. So my advice is you get a 5-year loan, you pay it off in 2 years.
Great advice. Okay. You heard it here first from Jack Lancaster. Thank you, Jack.
All right. You're welcome.
Great to talk to you.
Good as always, Andy.
We will be back tomorrow. McCray Hepler will be here. We'll talk to you then.